Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and this hour we're bringing you the 12th Annual Annapolis Summit, nearly live from the Governor Calvert House in Annapolis. We've just recorded what you're hearing just hours ago. We just talked to Republican Governor Larry Hogan. Now I sit down with the new Maryland Attorney General, Democrat Brian Frosch.
Attorney General Frosch, we say General Frosch, welcome.
Brian will do.
Did you ever think you were going to be a general?
You can refer to me as your generality. If you're
Good to see you, Brian. Welcome to the podium here. And thanks for coming to Annapolis Summit this morning. We're talking about whether people elected. It's interesting they elected a very liberal attorney general and a very conservative governor. That's an interesting juxtaposition.
Well, that's democracy for you.
That's a good answer. Let me begin. I mean, I think that there have been a number of issues that will be coming to the fore in this state legislature, which we'll be talking to the Speaker and the President about in a little while. And one of those things has to do with issues of policing in the state of Maryland. And while you don't run the police, you are the chief, in a sense, law enforcement officer of the state, and you have the bully pulpit and can weigh in. So there will be people who will be introducing legislation that will ask for a change in the Police Officers' Bill of Rights to allow for stronger civilian review boards in communities and more civilian control of the police. And the police unions, of course, oppose that. And so that's going to be a huge controversy. And the other is going to have to do with police officers wearing body cameras. So in the wake of what we've seen across the country from in Ferguson and Yonkers and Trayvon Martin and more. So what's your stand on those things? And what will you be talking about to the state legislators?
Well, let me say first that my new job puts me in a completely different position than my old one.
Yes,
where
it does.
I had to weigh in on every single
right.
one of those bills. And I think as Attorney General, we're going to be looking at the overall impact of different policies. We want to make sure that people are safe in their neighborhoods. Most of the police officers in this state, the vast, vast majority, do a great job, keep us safe, create the foundation of our economy and the foundation of our lives by making sure that we're safe and secure in our homes and schools, online, et cetera. We have problems. I mean, there are times when excessive force is used. There are times when racial profiling occurs. And my office, I think, is going to make efforts to weigh in on those issues and give guidance to police officers and law enforcement officers throughout the state. As to the specific proposals that will come before the General Assembly, I'm not sure we're going to be weighing in on every single one. But there are things that we can do that will improve the relations between communities and the folks who protect them, and I hope we can improve that.
So, I mean, how much do you see yourself getting involved in legislative issues then? Not because you were a former state senator and leader of the Senate,
right.
but because that part of what you have here is weighing in on the whether it's the environment or gun control laws or issues around police and violence. I mean, those and consumer protection. I mean, those are your bailiwicks.
Yeah,
right.
And we'll be weighing in on bills that relate to on bills that have a major impact on policy areas within the jurisdiction of the Attorney General, but not on every single bill.
So, folks, we do have folks at the mics. Please join us here, and there are questions to the Attorney General. A lot's going to be happening. We're going to be covering some really important issues here with him. So, let me let you all have your go at it first. Your name and who you are.
Yes. Good morning, Attorney General. Thank you for being here.
Morning.
My name is Erin McMichael. I am an active community member with a nonprofit called Food and Water Watch. It has been brought to my attention that the contract growers who raise chickens for big companies like Purdue and Tyson are burdened with the expense of the chicken waste and the dead birds, while these big companies reap all of the profitable benefits. Number one, do you find this fair? And number two, will you support legislation that requires them to be responsible for these dead birds in the waste and make them responsible for their own cleanup?
Well, as you probably know, cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay has been one of my highest priorities as a legislator. It will continue to be as Attorney General. The issue that you raise is a very important one, but not necessarily one that the Attorney General would get involved in. We have a really difficult balance to strike, I think, with agriculture and especially confined animal feeding operations in the Eastern Shore throughout the state. Confined animal feeding operations have to follow the law. They have to make sure that the waste that is created is treated properly and is not allowed to pollute the Chesapeake Bay. The chicken growers, the farmers who raise these chickens, aren't making a lot of money. The companies that process the chickens really do make significant amounts of money, but it's very difficult to change the economic mix there, in part because most of the industry is growing on the Delmarva Peninsula, which by definition is three different states. And what we do has an impact in Maryland, but it's very easy for Purdue or any other chicken company to say, look, if you're going to impose additional economic burdens on us, we'll move to the farmers 5 miles away or 3 miles away in Delaware, Virginia. We want to make sure that our farmers can stay in business, that the Chesapeake Bay is clean and protected. I'm not sure what the legislative answer to that is. I can tell you that as Attorney General, we'll be enforcing the law. If we have CAFOs, if we have processors who are violating the law, we'll be pursuing them.
So just following up on that question, and then we'll go to our next question up there at the mic. There could be, as people have written about, and I know that we're in a political, in a sense, kumbaya moment between the legislature and you and Governor Hogan, and everybody's feeling good about things, at least on paper and on the surface. But there's always that stuff that bubbles under the surface, which is where it really is, and we'll see how that bubbles up the next couple of months. But one of those areas that we have to probe with you right now is there are some real differences around policy between you and the governor. And there are always questions, when I interviewed you when you were running for AG along with the other candidates, who does the Attorney General serve first? Does it serve the governor? The governor saying, no, I don't want you to pursue or go against this particular suit against the state of Maryland. We're not going to fight firearm safety. We're not going to fight the regs around agriculture. I don't want you doing this. Or is the Attorney General saying, look, this is my job is to protect the people of Maryland, so I will pursue these things. So you're going to be, in some senses, caught between this as AG in the next 4 years.
Well, the Attorney General has a lot of different clients. We represent the General Assembly, we represent the governor, we represent every state agency, we represent the judiciary. So in some senses, there are conflicts of interests. I also didn't check my beliefs at the door when I was elected Attorney General. And so that'll play an important role in what our office does. But the Attorney General defends the state when it gets sued and sues on behalf of the state. And I view the Attorney General, the office of the Attorney General, as the people's lawyer. And that's how I plan to operate it. I'm going to do what I think is in the best interest of the people of the state of Maryland and aggressively pursue polluters if they're soiling the bay, people who are cheating consumers, people who are abusing vulnerable citizens. And sometimes those views will conflict with the governor or even the General Assembly, and I'm hoping that most of the time they won't.
So, I'll come back to the end of that, but let me go back to the audience. Please, sir, your name and your question.
Good morning. I'm Bob Martin from Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, and I'd like to follow up on the poultry issue. The density of production on the Eastern Shore is a threat to public health and damages the environment, but what undergirds that whole system is something called the contract tournament pricing system. That is something, as Attorney General, you could address, and you could lead a multi-state effort to look at it through the broiler belt, which would be the Delmarva Peninsula and down through the south. Would you be interested in leading an effort to look at the tournament pricing system as a violation of antitrust laws in this region, as other attorney generals have in hog production?
Yeah, I hope to have a good cooperative relationship with the attorneys general from Virginia and Delaware and engage in precisely actions such as those. as I said before, I mean, there is a balance that has to be struck, and having a three-state solution is the ideal way of approaching it. We don't, if we put our farmers at a competitive disadvantage to their competitors in Virginia and Delaware, we run the risk of growing townhouses instead of corn and soybeans. The only reason they're in business today, and most of them don't make a lot of money at farming. They own land that's very valuable, but they're not getting rich with the operations. But the reason they're in business is because they're close to their market for corn and soybeans, and that's in large part the market for growing chickens. So we have a real, we have a difficult balance to strike. The best way to do it is to engage with our neighboring jurisdictions, and I hope to be able to do that.
Well, if it, again, following up with that, and we'll go to our next person in line, one of the things that could happen in the next 4 years or more, if you do more than one term, is that the Environmental Protection Agency has set certain guidelines about runoff to the bay and cleaning up the bay. And if we do not have the phosphorus management tool and we do not have regulations in place that control the pollution in the bay and the numbers of phosphorus pollution that goes up, not down, then you will be in a position of either defending the state against the EPA.
That's right.
Or defending the land and the people against the administration.
That's right. Look, we've got to do something about phosphorus pollution in the bay. We've got to do something about stormwater pollution. That's the biggest source of sediment in the Chesapeake Bay. We can't begin to address the problems of the bay without hitting those two marks.
Right.
And there are areas that have been unaddressed. We've done all the easy stuff. I mean, literally, we've done all the easy stuff. We've done a lot of hard stuff, too. We're running as fast as we can, and we're kind of stuck in the same place. A big reason for that is because of the additional population in the Chesapeake Bay Basin. During the time that I've been in public office, the population of the Chesapeake Bay Basin has increased by about 2 million people. When you consider all the additional impervious surfaces that have been slapped down, houses, buildings, roads, etc., the additional traffic on the roads that causes pollution to come out the tailpipes, go up in the air, down in the bay, and all the human waste that's added to the bay, that's probably the reason that we're stuck in the low in low 30s, high 20s on the Chesapeake Bay Foundation's ranking of the Chesapeake Bay. In order to address it, as I said, we have to do stormwater management, we have to do phosphorus management, and we have to grow in a way that makes sense. We have to have growth that where we have compact development and smart growth.
But I mean, as we said, you're no longer the kind of driving state senator
that
you were to push this legislation. But the reality seems to be what we're facing at the moment, at least the Bay is facing, and the contradictions is facing, have to do with we're seeing the stormwater runoff fee going down to a penny in some places and being sliced in Baltimore County and not being really enforced. If that happens and we don't have a way to regulate phosphorus coming off of farms as well, the two major sources of pollution for the Bay. What are your thoughts about what the future could bring? Because that's what I'm saying will put you in a sticky position as AG. I mean, you either have to say the EPA is right and I'm going to fight with the people of Maryland and the land with the EPA, or no, I'm going to serve the state government who says we're doing it all we can and you have to back off and leave us alone. I mean,
right.
That's what I'm saying. You'll be between a rock and a hard place in some senses, politically and legally.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm going to continue to say that we need to address these problems. We can't ignore the phosphorus that's coming into the bay, especially from the eastern shore, and we can't ignore the problem of stormwater throughout the state. And I don't have a vote, but I'm going to continue to talk to my friends in the General Assembly and talk to the administration and hope to encourage them to take strong actions in those regards.
Let's go back to the audience.
I'm Damien Gate, Patterson High School. I have a question about people's safety in their home. Are you going to address the self-defense law?
I'm sorry.
I didn't hear the question.
The self-defense law, are you going to address it?
Self-defense law?
Yes.
Well, there is a law that has been proposed, or bill that's been proposed in Maryland called Stand Your Ground.
Right.
And I'm opposed to that. It, in fact, helped kill it when it came before the Judicial Proceedings Committee when I was chairman. That's the law that resulted in the death of Trayvon Martin in Florida. I think it's a law that that leads to more violence. Sometimes it makes sense not to stand your ground. People have a right to defend themselves in their homes. They can use reasonable force. You don't have to run out of the house. You can fight to protect your property, but I think we have the right balance in Maryland now. I don't think we need a stand your ground law.
Thank you for your question. Before we go back to the audience, so one of the other issues that's facing Maryland now, and I don't know what the transition has been like since you just became the Attorney General, but the Maryland Firearms Safety Act of 2013 is under attack by, was it 21 states? Do I have that right?
Yes.
21 states?
Yep.
And so the former Attorney General was going to file suit, and so where do you stand on this, and what are you going to be doing?
We've been sued. Some gun owners in the state of Maryland have claimed and filed suit in federal court and said, look, the Firearm Safety Act violates the Second Amendment. The basis for that claim is that it's illegal for the state, or violation of the Second Amendment for the state, to ban assault weapons, military-style assault weapons, and high-capacity magazines. I think that is way off base. We won, the state won in the federal district court. The other side has appealed. It's now pending in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. We will defend that law vigorously. It makes sense. It'll save lives in the state of Maryland. Gun deaths in Maryland have dropped since the law became effective a year and a quarter ago. Some folks attribute that to the Firearm Safety Act. I think it's a little premature, but I'm confident in the long run this is legislation that's going to make a difference, make people safer, and save lives.
Let's go back to the audience. That's it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Noel Isama, and I'm Director of Transparency and Accountability at Common Cause Maryland. And citizens and concerned organizations have an extremely difficult time getting access to public information in Maryland, usually through excessive fees, overbroad application of exemptions, and the lack of an enforcement mechanism. I was wondering if you can comment around the issues regarding the Public Information Act, but also what you can see you can do in your role as Attorney General to promote transparency and accountability within state government.
Thank you, Noel.
Good question.
As Attorney General, I am going to be encouraging state agencies to be open, to be transparent. I think the default response should be, here's the information you're seeking, instead of the opposite. Sometimes there's a reflexive response, we don't want to tell you. That isn't the way we should be approaching this. We want to make government open, we want to make it transparent, we want to make it easy for people to get the information. And I think my office can help do that.
Again, thank you so much for that question. That's a really good question. And so again, this becomes a question of the litigation question for our chief litigator here. There could be people who might sue various state agencies to say, we want this information, whether it has to do with farming records or whether it has to do with proceedings that have taken place in somebody's offices and they don't want to release those proceedings and those things. And so people could sue the state saying, we want more transparency, we want to know what happened there, and we have a right to that information. And then you have a right to say, what? Yes, I'm going to say, no, you don't, and I'm going to defend the state, or I'm going to defend the right, or just stand out of it.
It's part of the Attorney General's job is to get the state to follow the law. And I will be doing that. I'll be encouraging all of the assistant attorneys general to advise all of the state agencies to do that. Tell their clients, look, this is what the law requires you to disclose this information. Let's do it at the outset so that we don't get involved in litigation. If we get sued before the Attorney General's office finds out about it, we'll try to resolve it before it actually goes before a judge. That's not to say that every single request is a request that warrants or requires a full response, but most of the time, the answer ought to be, yes, here it is, we'll produce it for you in the cheapest, most efficient possible way.
Another question here.
Hi, my name is Megan. I'm from the Real News Network. So I have a question about police. So there are calls to have independent outside prosecutor come in to address police power. What do you think about this measure? Do you agree with it? Why or why not?
Well, I've heard that there might be legislation proposed to do that. I'm certainly happy to take a look at it. I understand that Kurt Anderson, I know, Delegate Kurt Anderson, is looking at legislation that would give to the Attorney General the responsibility of looking at cases in which there is alleged to be an excessive use of force. I think the question on something like that is a question of resources. We don't have any extra attorneys general who don't have anything to do at the moment. Our budget's just been cut twice. I think most state's attorneys do a very good job in resolving those cases. There are some very difficult cases that get a lot of attention and perhaps don't get the result that is ideal. But I think it's worth looking at other mechanisms for extraordinary cases, and I'd even consider some dramatic change that moves all of those cases into one jurisdiction. But it's going to be very expensive, and you're going to have to somebody will have to figure out a way of paying for it if it's going to be done right.
Okay.
So what the questioner just said, I mean, that this will be another, I think, issue that we'll talk in the next hour with our president and speaker when they come up. But that this revolves itself around the whole question of the Policeman's Bill of Rights. I mean, and I think the sticking point is will become whether or not police officers should have the right to wait 7 to 10 days, or whatever that number is, before they can have to answer a certain question, before they can be indicted for anything, and or whether it should be like civilians and move ahead in a faster way, and whether that allows civilian review boards to come in that actually have the power to either indict or exonerate. I mean, that's going to be the heart of this issue, I think.
Well, yes and no. I mean, in cases where criminal misconduct is alleged, there aren't the same barriers. So there are going to be, I assume, attempts to amend the police officers, the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights. It's a technical process. I don't think there's that much of a problem with criminal investigations. There are with misconduct, or at least there are alleged to be problems with police misconduct that is a civil problem, doesn't amount to a crime, and for their discipline and potential removal. I think the vast majority of situations, the police do a superb job in protecting us. We can do better. I'm not quite sure whether tweaking the law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights is going to make a huge difference in the high-profile cases that you see where there is a death or serious injury, shooting in an alleged police misconduct case.
Back to the audience.
Good morning. I'd like to ask a question about citizen standing. As you're aware, Mr. Attorney General, Maryland has some of the most restrictive abilities for citizens to go to court and protect their neighborhoods from environmental pollution, from zoning violations. I mean, it's sort of an absurd limit that you have to be harmed differently than everybody else, that you have to be adjacent, not just 100 feet down the road. This issue has been discussed over the years in the General Assembly, but how can your office help us actually move and improve this to a much fairer system?
Well, Drew, as you know, I've been an advocate for expanded citizen standing.
I thought I'd give you a softball.
Thank you. let's hope I can at least foul it off. So I think as a policy matter, it's a great idea. My office doesn't directly deal with that. We can weigh in on it and will. But the Attorney General also plays an important role here. And if there are citizens who see violations of the law and they bring them to our attention, the Attorney General's office will pursue those actions. So, I mean, that's something that is one of my highest priorities, enforcement of our environmental laws, enforcement of our consumer laws. But while I think it would be great if citizens had more rights to bring those lawsuits, the Attorney General certainly does. Let me know if you see one.
Thank you.
So one of the major pushes for you is going to be around consumers' rights. So a big question for many people has to do with two things here. A is the question of our information. You're seeing now in Congress that both Republicans, some Republicans from the Tea Party to progressive Democrats are coming together to say the information that police and others can use from our cell phones has to be limited. That could be extended from that also to what businesses can take from us on our electronic devices and knowing who we are, what we think, what we want, what we don't want. And that's going to become a huge legal issue in this century, probably one of the top three legal issues of this century. So where does our state AG stand on this, and what are your plans about addressing this in the state of Maryland?
Two things. One, the privacy issues are key, but there is also rampant consumer fraud in a number of different areas. We just settled a case last week where we got $11 million for Maryland consumers, folks who were the victims of a kickback scheme between title companies and their loan officers. The title companies were paying loan officers to refer loans to them. Our citizens suffered $11 million worth of damages. We got an award from Wells Fargo and Chase Banks. They'll be paying back those folks. We also got $3 million for the state in fines from those cases. There are situations across the board where, you know, I have a mother who's 94 years old.
Congratulations.
She's at home. She's still sharp, but she is bored. Most of her friends are gone, and she gets phone calls, and she picks up the phone when she shouldn't, you know. And she'll say to me, this guy had a really great proposal for me to change my investments from here to there. And they're scams. Maryland consumers need to be on the alert for that, and the Attorney General's office is going to vigorously enforce those laws. But we are victims on the internet, by telephone, and often in person of major scams. We have to be alert for that. My office will help educate, but also pursue the folks who are doing it. Privacy is a huge concern in this internet era. Everything you do online with your cell phones is capable of being recorded, used to track you, your shopping habits, your preferences, and to determine your financial investments, your bank accounts, your credit accounts. And that information is vulnerable when it's collected. The folks who are collecting it are doing it ostensibly for good purposes. They want to know that when you're on the internet, they want to show you just the right ad to entice you to buy a product that you might otherwise be interested in. But it's capable of great misuse, and we'll be working hard to protect Maryland citizens' privacy and the abuse of the information that people are collecting about us.
So I appreciate you being here, and I know that, and I'm happy your mom's still with us at 94, which means that if genetics are true, you could be Attorney General for the next 25 years.
Yeah. Well, Joe Curran set the record, and I'm not paying for it.
It's good to have you here, Attorney General Frosch. Thank you so much for being with us, Brian. Always good to see you.
You're listening to the 12th Annual Annapolis Summit, brought to you by The Mark Steiner Show, The Daily Record in WEAA, and sponsored by Stevenson University, Baltimore Gas and Electric, the Maryland State Education Association, the Center for a Livable Future, Alexander and Cleaver, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. When we come back, we'll talk with two of the most powerful men in the Maryland legislature, Senate President Mike Miller and House Speaker Michael Bush. Stay with us and stay tuned.